Welcome to the Penguin Magic Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Tate. Joining me as always, my good buddy, Nick LaCapo. Nick, how you doing?
Good morning. It is, I got my Chris Angel sweatshirt on.
Oh, I'm nice. Doing good. Nice. Yeah. I got my, my Global League of Magicians and Mentalists shirt from the Jerks on today.
This is one of those, like, I'm sure everybody's got those types of things. Like, you remember, you were there, we were filming Chris Angel, like, just before the world shut down.
Yeah, what a crazy time. It's like having Chris Angel check our shots and be like, yeah, this is really tight, guys.
That was ridiculous. Being able to use the tech in that theater was madness. Yeah.
It was, and the show was, like, a lot of fun to go see. It was, like, it was big spectacle.
I guess if people don't know what we're talking about his Penguin Live lecture that we filmed in January 2020. Is that when we filmed it?
Yeah, it was right before the world ended. And so it was you and me and another guy flew out there, and we saw the show the night before.
Right.
And then we had like a time limit to get the lecture filmed because they had to do fire checks. Do you remember that? Like, we had to be out at a certain period of time because, like, they check the fire in the show every day because there's a colossal amount of fire in the show.
I know there's people out there that get to work on, like, big stages like that all the time, and it's probably not that big a deal. But to me, whenever I'm on stages like that, I'm like, this is just crazy. Like, I know this floor opens up here, and I know there's an explosive under there. And here's a 50-foot LED wall that can move front and back, left and right, you know, or fall into the floor. It's crazy.
Yeah, that was nuts.
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't thought about that shoot in a while, but I remember having like audio issues because the theater was so big that we so big. Like our recording equipment was not designed for a room that large.
No, we showed up with our Best Buy recording equipment. We have better stuff than that, but. Yeah, no, this is the sweatshirt. I had to have it when I saw it in the gift shop. It was like, oh, give me the Chris Angel Mind Freak sweatshirt. Got to have it.
I deeply regret not getting my own Mind Freak sweatshirt, but that's okay. That's okay. Let's talk about some stuff that happened last week. We have the Penguin Magic Awards came out. That was fun.
Yeah, that turned out really good.
I think so too.
And wow, kind of not a surprise winner, but it was just like a pleasant surprise trick of the year as well. Rizky is such a, nobody more deserving than Rizky Nanda.
It's really cool when we can showcase a really like sort of underground performer from around the globe. And Rizky just keeps like putting out bangers, man.
But we see it more, right? Yeah. Because we see stuff from Rizky quite often. A lot of stuff that people don't ever see see from Rizky, but he is one of those that if you jump on Penguin and search for his name, you'll find a lot of just, you know, inexpensive downloads of his of just small tricks. But man, if you actually watch them, you're like, wow, this method is different and clever. I say it a lot. There's one called like I think it's called the Bending Machine that I always thought was really interesting, which is, he's got a partner account on Penguin. So he's been putting out tricks for quite a while.
And, you know, Super Sucker is one of those where I know when it first came across our desk, we were like, oh, that's kind of cute. That's fun. And, you know, there's no reason not to put this out. And then we started performing it and it's weirdly strong. Like it's actually kind of hard to follow. I do it at the restaurant whenever there's kids to like hand lollipops out. And it gets an enormous reaction. If you don't know what it is, you basically pull a nickel out of someone's ear and then you attach it to a stick and then it transforms into a lollipop and then it wraps itself before you can immediately hand out the lollipop, which is just so cool.
Yeah, one trick of the year this year. And yeah, you're exactly right. You can't follow it and you can't do anything before it. It's like the perfect opener and closer. So if you know magic and you just don't want to show anybody anything, just do that trick and they won't want to see anymore.
I think the big thing that came out of the Penguin Awards, though, was Craig Petty winning Creator of the Year twice in a row and then just throwing the gauntlet down and saying he's going to win it again next year.
Well, I know that like there's a Craig Petty trick coming out next week, right?
Yeah.
So we were just looking at the release calendar.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's got, I would say, better tricks this year than last year already slated. So
I agree. That guy's just a machine.
I don't know how we've talked about this before, but yeah, where does when does he sleep? I mean, we know never.
He doesn't.
And yeah, so I don't know. He'll be back out here soon too. We're filming more. It's like his yearly. I feel like he comes out here twice a year now to film. It's crazy.
Is he going to be with us again for Magic Live?
I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea. Probably. I guess the answer is yes.
Well, I know we always like working with him, and he's got some great tricks. Like this trick that's coming out next week is a collector's effect. If that's because it's superimposed is what's coming out, and it's a really strong collector's effect. Like I was watching the tutorial for the ad copy, and man, it's a very, very strong collector's.
Very
Like
strong.
it's fully
Very
gimmicked,
strong.
but it's going to be. I think people are going to like it.
It's a collector's with a repeat and surprise ending. So it's very good. It's very good. It's one of the, I feel like it's something Craig's probably had for a long time, but it's only been put out now. So it's very, very good.
And then Flight Deck came out last week by Steve Gore. This is the Edgemark deck that has white borders, which is a wild thing to think about. A white bordered Edgemark deck that people are digging that, which is fun. And I think that people are like really jumping on Flight Deck because it's got some things. Because of those white borders, you couldn't do like reverse card tricks the way you could with GPS deck. And I think Flight Deck really fixed a lot of those things. And not that there was anything wrong with GPS deck, but Flight Deck really took it up a notch with the design.
Yeah, and I think I've already seen a lot more popularity in the deck from this one and GPS. And I don't know that it's because of the design change so much. I just feel like people are more comfortable using any design deck of cards.
It's
I
almost
think we've still been hung up on that because GPS came out in like 2015, 16, 17, somewhere in there. And I think even then people were still like, no, I have to perform with Bicycle. But these days I feel like sky's the limit. It doesn't matter anymore. I feel like audiences don't, they see the Batman playing cards at Target, you know, like it's, they're all over the place. So Bicycle cards are probably becoming even less, what do you call it? Identifiable, you know?
I think that's, because when you go into Walgreens these days or CVS or wherever you go and you go like buy your deck of cards, there's so many exotic designs from the USPCC on that end cap display that the designer decks are just like they're kind of ubiquitous. They're just sort of out there and
Well, let me give you a good example too. Like, because I did read a comment on the flight deck, somebody saying like, if it ain't Bicycle, I don't, you know, I don't mess with it. And I respect that. But Aussie Wind, and I'm assuming nothing here because I don't know. I genuinely don't know. But Aussie Wind was just on a gigantic podcast video. I don't know if you've ever watched the Huberman Lab, but he was doing magic for Andrew Huberman. And he definitely is not using a bicycle deck in that clip. I would, my magician in me tells me that that deck is a little extra special as well. Something that a lot of these people that would might be scared of using the flight deck in a situation like that might be afraid of. But here you have, and I don't know. I mean, it could be a completely ordinary deck, but when I look at it, I'm like, I don't know. There's Aussie Wind on one of the biggest podcasts in the world. Who cares? Nobody cares. Nobody cares. So, you know.
I think you can kind of use whatever deck you want these days.
Yeah, I think so.
We've got a couple more things coming out that we should talk about. Jumper, new R. Paul Wilson trick. This is a really interesting gaff that allows you to do some fun transpositions.
Jumper is a fun one. I like what R. Paul says about Jumper. Like, I love watching R. Paul's tutorials where he says, you know, when somebody says they want to see a card trick, that means they want to see a card trick. But they don't know that, right? They don't know that. But what they don't want to see is like, you know, 10 faces of ambitious card, which I can agree and disagree with at the same time. But Jumper is that trick for him where when he has it, it's just a strong, singular, focused moment of magic. That satisfies that need for like a card trick. Because what happens is it's a very almost like sleight of hand feeling trick. You know, it's something that you could kind of do with a monster amount of sleight of hand, but the gimmick makes it much, much easier. And you just have a king and a queen. You place the king into the center of the deck, or the queen into the center of the deck. Doesn't I can't remember which one. Not sure it matters. You put the queen in the center of the deck, leave it sticking out so that they can see it. King is on the top. And they just change places, basically. And that's it. But it's framed in a really cool time travel presentation. And it's kind of test conditions and possible level stuff. So it's very cool transposition.
It's based off of an old Roy Walton trick called Back into Time. And that trick is great, but you need duplicates and there's some complicated sleight of hand. And this just sort of it solves a lot of those problems that you have. And then he teaches you like two or three other routines with the gaff on there. So it's not just like a one-trick pony. It's well worth looking at. But if you love transpositions, Jumper is it. And then coming out this
Well,
week.
and one other thing about Jumper, it's $15, which is a odd price point for us. That those don't really happen very often, so little less expensive.
Yeah, which is nice. And then the other one we were going to talk about before we get into the main topic this week is Going Up.
It's a little tease, I guess. When does this come out?
It
Thursday?
says it comes out Thursday, and I think.
So on Friday, we've been doing those deals, right, where you spend X amount of money and you get a bunch of stuff for free. This, I believe, I guess don't hold it to me, but I believe this will be one of those free tricks. It's a brand new trick from Sean Ridgway. I'm really fond of this trick. I think it's a good one. It's very visual. What happens is you have four cards. You turn one of them face up, King of Hearts, and you place it on the bottom of the four of the other three face down cards, and you kind of spread them out so they're like in a little like stepped ladder position. And then one at a time, you visually see the king melt up to the third card, to the second card, and then ultimately all the way to the top. And it's just a really incredibly easy and visual sequence of magic that I think is going to fool you when you see it. And you won't believe how easy it is to do. Feels like something Shin Lim would do.
It really does. It actually it reminds me a little bit of like Shin Splint, but Shin Splint is like all sleight of hand, and you got to have fingers as delicate as butterfly wings to do it. Yeah,
Yeah,
this
that
is.
was, yeah, that trick. Yeah.
This has got some clever little moments, and it actually I was going through my magic box the other day because I've moved into the new house and the new studio and everything.
Did you fix your hole in the wall yet?
I did. If you're on the YouTube, you can see
Oh, wow.
I patched the hole.
Yep, there it is.
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah. The
Wow.
hole is not it, there's not a hole in the wall anymore. So check us out on the YouTubes to find out the hopefully by the end of next week there's going to be
Yeah,
like.
tune in next week when there's a shelf.
Yeah, but I found this old trick called Mexican Revolution that reminded me a little bit of this. And so this is like a tried and true method that's been around for a while, but Sean's like got some fun little twists on it that make it nice. It's a great packing
Cool.
trick, throw it in your wallet.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed doing it, and I think you'll be fooled when you see it. So take a look for Going Up. Save your purchase for Friday.
Let's get into sort of the main topic this week. So a little bit later in the episode, I'm going to be talking to Leah Orleans about her new convention that is going to be coming out. And so
I've
I
been
thought,
following that one closely.
yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. And I thought it might be fun for you and I to talk about conventions a little bit. Like, what was your first convention, Nick?
We talked about my first convention like a few weeks ago,
Oh, that's
which was
right. The Denny Lees or the
Hank
Hank
Lee's,
Lees.
and I don't remember which one it was. It was Magic Conclave, and it's probably like 04, something like that, 2004. And I remember it was, I mean, I can expand on this answer, but my first convention was that one. I showed up, I really didn't know much about magic or magicians or anything. I showed up. It started off really well because I went to a lecture, had no idea what a lecture was, and it was Garrett Thomas. And I learned the ring thing, which was the first thing he taught, and then God knows what else, but I was blown away by that. But then the rest of the convention was like silks and children's magic, and I was just like, oh, okay, I'm out. I think I even left early. I convinced myself that magicians were stupid and I just didn't want to be there anymore. So that's what happened.
What was your next convention after that? Because you must have you must have gone to like a good one at some point.
I did. I did. At the time, I was running a business where I was. It was a website. It was a game that I used to run, but I had wanted to travel overseas because some of the people that I interacted with on a daily basis within the game and within the business were in the Czech Republic and Sweden. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to, I was like, it would just be fun to go overseas. I'd never been out of America. So I was like, that'd be cool to go overseas. So I got my passport and all that. And then I had a copy of Magic Magazine and it said that FISM was coming to Sweden 2006. So I was like, well, I guess that would give me something else to do. Let me go to that. And so I went to FISM by myself and knew nobody. And that convention was incredible. I do remember that one.
I love that you're going from the Cape Cod Conclave to FISM.
Well, you know what? Like, looking back, the Cape Cod Conclave is probably awesome. Like, it was in a great venue. And I don't know who else was there. There probably was other great performers there and things. But at the time, I was too ignorant to care. But the FISM in 2006, and I have been to other FISMs since then, no comparison.
Yeah.
No comparison. Stockholm 2006, maybe there's been better ones. I don't know. But that one was, from what I thought, was incredible.
I just pulled up the championship. So if you don't know, you can actually go back and see who won in what year on FISM.org. And that was the year that Rick Merrill won the Grand Prix in close-up.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he?
He did his marker and coin routine. Basically, it's a download on Penguin at this point.
Yeah,
the champ. It's called Champ on Penguin. Yeah,
which is
It's just kind of the moves in it, not the like actual routine. But yeah,
which is wild because also I don't quite know how this happened. He didn't win in Micro Magic because
it was that Rocco.
No, it was Martini Isali, and then that was the year that Sean Farquhar came in second and David Stone came in third.
Mm.
And then Helder Gomerez was first place in Card Magic that year, and Kiko Pastor was third.
Interesting.
And Sean Farquhar took second in Parlor that year as well. But it looks like, so here's what happened. Rick was in Comedy Magic, and they didn't award anybody in Comedy Magic, but they gave Rick the Grand Prix in close-up.
Huh.
I'll have to go back and research that, because that's a really unusual thing.
Mm.
Oh.
The convention was incredible.
Oh, I'm sure it was.
It had different events. Like, what I remember the most was it had different events in different places. Like, there was like a dinner that we had in the hall that they give away the Nobel Peace Prize in.
Whoa!
Right? So, like, it was this gold building in the middle of downtown Stockholm. And then like there was a street performer competition that happened, but it happened in the city. Yep. So all the it didn't happen in the theater.
Mm-hmm.
It happened on the street. So like the street performers were working for the whole week. So anywhere you walked in Sweden or Stockholm, there was just magic going on.
That's awesome.
But I got to see, you know, and I don't know these names. I had no idea who these people were at the time, but Armando Lucero.
Oh,
that was one of the first lectures I went to there. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? I mean, I knew a little bit more about magic at this point too. So I was a little bit more appreciative of things. And then I kind of forced myself to go a lot of the performances at FISM. So like I saw, I believe Darren Brown competed that year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm like, it's one of those memories that like I have that I'm like, did that happen? And I'm pretty sure that it did. I saw him. I don't believe his routine worked. I think he was trying something a little bit fringe and out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the performance that he did just didn't work. So he didn't move on.
That's crazy.
There was something else I was going to mention about. But there was just a lot of memories from FISM. What was yours? What was your first convention?
My first convention was the Winter Carnival of Magic.
Oh, that's right.
Back when it was in Gatlinburg before it moved to Pigeon Forge.
Was it even weirder then, or was it?
Oh, it was even weirder, yeah. And the first lecture I saw was Simon Lovell.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. So I learned card to mouth. I learned how to make a rose out of a napkin. And then I think later that night, like I was all of 19 and Simon like gave me money and was like, go get me a beer, kid. And I'll teach you something else, which was is funny. And then I competed that year because I was really into spoon bending at the time. So I had some like kind of unique bends that hadn't really been seen before. And I took second place. Which was
that's how it goes out there, right?
First magic convention I'd ever been to, first competition ever, took second place. And I'll never forget, I got my judges sheets back, and I don't know who the judge was, but they wrote down, I like your routine, but I prefer card magic. If you'd done card magic, you could have won first place. Which was like, what a weird comment to make on a spoon bending act.
Hey, at least you took that to heart, right? You did card magic at your next competition, right?
Yeah. It was also really surreal because one of the first spoon bends I ever learned was Chad Sanborn's Mind Bender, which is a great spoon bend. You can still pick it up on Penguin, I think. It's a DVD that has three tricks on it that are not related. His three fly, which is really great. He's got a production of three coins and then a three fly and then a vanish of three coins. And it uses just three coins. There's no gimmicks. It's really cool. Actually, I should go back and like relearn some of that. And then Mind Bender, which is the spoon bend on there. That's very good. And then there's a rubber band trick. That's like a penetration. That's really good. But Chad Sanborn, competed and I beat him with his own move, which was wild.
Oh no.
Yeah.
That's,
but he was a great guy, like really became a good friend, really fun to hang out with and talk with. And then that was the other thing I really remember was I bought, remember they used to have the bicycle made the U.S. military decks, which were like a darker red and then a.
Yeah, I still have some of those.
Yeah, I got one somewhere. Well, I bought one and I opened it up and it was horribly misprinted. And so I traded it out with the dealer for a regularly printed one. And I've never regretted something more because I was like, because that could have been like an incredible, like final reveal for a misprinted deck or something like that. Which was neat. But then the next one was Magi Fest, but this is back before Vanishing was running it. This was 20 years ago when it was the local club that was running it. And, man, who did I see at that? I mean, that was, I met Carl Norman there. Carl Norman taught me the three shell game, which was crazy. And then it was the first time I'd seen Rick Smith Jr. perform.
Oh, wow. So yeah, that'll change you.
He did, I'll never forget, he did an incredible illusion on the stage where he had this woman went into a box and then the box sort of fell open and she was gone. And instantly she was in the back of the room. And everyone was floored. It was the very first night of the convention. And then the illusion was completely ruined by Rick hanging out with these beautiful identical twins the rest of the convention.
Why? Well, why not?
Yeah. No, it was great. It was really, really good.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, but those were the early days.
Yeah. I think after that, the next convention I went to might have been the Genie convention, the first one in Orlando. I remember, like, at that time I had just moved into the Magic Estate in Orlando and I was starting to meet magicians, and I remember I ran the door at the Real Secrets private party or whatever.
Yeah,
I had to run the checklist. Michael Weber's and Tim Trono's like little club there, they had a thing.
Yeah.
And I remember that's when I met Chad Long, because I showed Chad the pinky trick, pinky thing, and Chad lost his mind, and he dragged me around to everybody at the convention and made me show it to them. but yeah. I mean, since then, I've been to a billion and a half conventions.
Oh, yeah.
But
what do you think makes a good convention?
I think, and it's interesting you're talking to Leah, I do think conventions are looking for something new. Because I don't think, at least I haven't felt, and I'm not sure that people feel it like I did at FISM or Genie or any of those so much anymore when they show up. And I think there's a lot of variables that go into that that I don't even realize at this point. So what makes a good convention? Well, at this point, we're just kind of following the same template that we've been doing. I think Blackpool's doing some nice things. I've never really attended Magic Live. I've only ever been in the dealer's room. So, but I hear up and down, stuff with them. But like, I think they're just kind of like following the same template, right? Like lectures, shows, dealer's room,
I know
right?
that Stan always tries to like find like one or two things that are like really different. Like a few years
Yeah.
ago, he had like Simon and Shoot did their show, their duo show, which is like
Right.
a play, but you see everything from like backstage. So it's like the magician's going out and performing, but you don't see any of the performance. You just see the stuff backstage, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then,
Yeah, they push it there, right? Like they do they that's the trying to get performers to like do things that are just different that only happen at a magic convention. And I think Magic Live's been very good about that. They had that like that illusion museum, right? Or was it the
That was really cool.
again, I never get to see anything when I'm there, so I guess I don't really know. But yeah, I think because when we were planning like the Max events and the expos, like we would really rack our brains trying to figure out, like what's something awesome that we can add to the convention. It's really difficult. Not that conventions are bad. I think maybe I've just been to too many of them at this point, and they're the same thing kind of over and over and over again. But there was something. Maybe the venue has a lot to do with it,
I think that like if the venue is like conducive to hanging out like late at night, like in the lobby, I think that makes a big difference, right? Because that's where all the convention stories happen, like where
It sure
you
does,
hear
yeah.
like Tony Chang doing some insane color change, or Juan Tamarez holding court for, a couple hundred people at 5 o'clock in the morning, or you see Tobias Dostal sort of like walking by you in the bar and then casually melting your brain with stuff.
Is that the secret that did we just unlock it right there? Like take a stellar magic convention lineup, right? That's happening at a good hotel, right? And then take that same lineup and put it at the Magic Castle. And like the memories are just completely different. I would have to I'm just assuming, but like that story then transforms into something else, right?
I think so. Like, I think it needs to have a place where everyone can feel like they're like hanging out like late at night in like a comfortable way. 'Cause I think one of the things that always shocks me at magic conventions is like when the bar or restaurant closes at 9 p.m.
Oh.
Like they're flabber like they're allergic to money.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, and then the best memory comes from all of you piling into a car and going to Denny's to eat at night, late night. But like, should that be the best memory? I don't, like I would rather that happen at the convention somehow, And I think it's hard to make those things or force those things,
There was a Max we did in New Jersey that I think did that really well, where like it was like R. Paul Wilson and Jason England were hanging out, and then Garrett Thomas was there, and there was like a really nice room where we could hang out until like 1 in the morning when it was starting to like wrap up. And that was a pretty good one, I think. 'Cause that was a fun hangout, like good people who wanted to hang out late.
Yeah, but if you can get it in like a different room, like not a hotel ballroom,
No, it's got to be
with
like,
like with close-up pads on the tables, just begging people to sit at them, but that, because sure, you sit at a table for the first time with Bill Malone and you'll never forget it. But I think all those things are just amplified if you're in a different type of environment and people show up, Yeah.
And then
But
you can't have a convention without a juggler on the gala show. That's just,
oh, they're the best. They're the best. You gotta have the juggler. Gotta have the juggler on the gala show. Gala shows could be better. I mean, and not like I mean the talent, but I mean the length. I know you want to deliver for value people paid to be there, but I
Four
think you're only hurting their
acts.
opinion of the show if it's two 2.5 hours long.
You need four acts on a gala show. You need a host, you need an opener, a middle, and a headliner. That's it.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's all you need.
If you're running a convention, that's how you run the gala show. You do not need 27 acts and a night of all the magic.
No. No. Yeah. Nobody's going to complain. At least I don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, they might at this point in Blackpool, just based on prior expectations, yeah. You know, like, wait a minute, where'd all the acts go? But it's fun to think about them and how they can improve. But we, you know, I love magic conventions.
Oh, there's so much stuff.
I've been to too many of them at this point.
Yeah. It's funny how they like start to blur together too, and like how different conventions feel more like a family. Like when you go to 4F or PCAM, like it's people who've been going to those conventions for 30 years, and they like every year they look forward to hanging out together. Whereas like at Blackpool, it's so big, and then you end up in the Ruskin meeting just strangers.
And that's why it's the best. Like you need the established spot that has character and history. Mm-hmm. The Ruskin.
Yeah.
The Ruskin like is crazy. When you go in there for the first time, you get it. You're like, well, all right, this is nuts because it's just is what it is. You know, Magic Live kind of has it at the
Mardi Gras bar.
The Mardi Gras bar.
Yeah.
But not everybody hangs there, you know, because it's kind of smoke filled and crazy.
Yeah.
But all the action kind of happens around it, you know, but it's not on the same level as the Ruskin, you know?
No, the Ruskin's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah. Magic Fest, I don't really know. At this point, they, you know, the old venue had a vibe to it in the lobby there. That was another one of those bars where it's like, wait a minute, why are you shutting down? You know, like, even more so now, right? Doesn't that bar like shut down?
No, this year that bar was open a little bit later.
For them.
And there's more stuff in the area than there used to be. So like because you could walk down to Pins from there, or there's like the Tip Top restaurant that is like, you know, where we film.
That's kind of
our stomping grounds.
It's kind of funny, like if it was more well known, like Pins could actually be the spot at Magi Fest, because it has magic history at it. We film at it all the time.
Yeah.
Which is kind of funny. It's a funny thing to go see.
Yeah. They've got that like jam session, that like sort of central lobby area, like open pretty late. I mean,
you've been at the convention all day. You just kind of want to like,
you want to change the scenery, you know,
get out of there, you know? Yeah. So, yeah. People ask if the Max and Expos are ever coming back. I mean, I probably get a message a month about it. And I think I can't rule anything out, but the answer at this point is no.
Never say never. I mean, there's things we want to do, but like I think it's people. You know, people call us the Walmart of magic, and I think that's disingenuous to Walmart because they're such a big team. Like, there's like eight of us running around with our heads on fire over here. So,
yeah, conventions are hard.
Yeah,
man, putting together a convention. Anybody that's done it, it is. You know, hats off to you. It is a tough, tough gig.
Yeah,
they definitely don't get the get the love that they deserve. Probably, I'm sure there's a lot of complaints most times about conventions. Hey, you get those good stories too, but for the most part, it's a crazy affair to manage. Not only all the egos and all the people that paid to be there and just delivering. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy.
Yeah, I think the next one that I'm slated for is I'm going to be at the IBM in Tacoma, which is going to be interesting because Tacoma's kind of hard to get to, but the lineup
far away.
The lineup's going to be insane. It's me, Rachel Wax, Nick DeFont, Michael Amar is going to be there.
Mm.
Like it's going to be a crazy convention. The lineup is really stacked.
I don't know. I'll be at Magic Live. And I think that's it. When is Abbott's? When is that?
You know, I've never been to Abbott's, and I'd kind of like to go.
Let me see. Abbott's Magic Convention. Because I'm, like, kind of into, like, going to these ones at this point. Like, to try to... July 31st to August 3rd. Ooh, let's see who's on this. They have a stacked lineup. Holy crap. All right, you ready?
Yeah.
You got Mack King,
ooh,
Paveney, Axel Hecklau, Chris Capehart, David Williamson, Clemen Ilgner,
mm-hmm.
Martin Surep, I'm assuming that both international performers, Derek Hughes, Piff the Magic Dragon, Barry Mitchell, Danny Archer, Ian Rich, John Reed.
It's a big lineup.
Am I reading this?
Is that who's been there?
Convention. John Reed, Jan Yoro, BJ Mollin, Alexander Boyce, Al the Only. Oh, I've heard about Al the Only. Yeah. Scott Coral, and more to come, they say. Like, they don't have enough. Oh, man.
So, Tacoma, I just pulled that up. Michael Vincent, Rachel Wax, Alexander DeVivier, Derek Hughes, Ben Nemzer, Henok Nagish, Nick DeFott, Michael Amar, Josh Masato, David Kovac, Connie Boyd, Eric Tate, Jade, Gabriella Lester, Leah Orleans, Bibik Cassandre, and Andre Pishnika.
Mm.
It's nuts.
Yeah,
how could you not go to this?
Yeah, that's big. Yeah, I'm just looking at the schedule at Abbott's. I'm going to put this on my calendar right now.
When is Abbott's?
It's July 31st and like a couple days afterward. Okay. So let me see. July 31st, there's nothing there. Yeah. Looks like we might have a lecture scheduled that weekend.
Oh.
But
which are coming back, which we're real excited about.
Mm. So Abbott's. I'm gonna put it on my calendar there just so I have it. Yeah, because I'd like to go to that one. I want to check out like what's the one in Iowa that might have already happened? Oh, Abracorn-dabra.
Yeah, I think that's Abracorn-dabra. And then isn't the Midwest Magic Jubilee still around?
Maybe, yeah. I'd like to make my way out to some of those to check them out. Because, I just never been. Never been.
There's some great conventions out there. Man, this is... we gotta get out to some of these other conventions pretty soon.
I try yeah. sometimes, yeah. but schedule gets crazy. And sometimes when I have a weekend free,
mm-hmm.
the last thing I want to do is... go to another magic convention.
Yeah, it is nice when we don't have to work them. So
yeah, are you going to go to Leah's convention?
I think so. It's not starting until 2025. You're going to hear about
right.
it. You're going to hear about it in a few minutes here. But I think I'm going to try.
Do you know the date of it off the top of your head? I forgot. I think I put it on my calendar, but I can't see it.
Leah says it in the interview, so the right. listeners should stay tuned and they will find out all about Leah's new convention, which is exciting. And she's got a pretty good lineup for that. Real quick, sorry about this quick edit. Nick and I accidentally reveal something about Leah's convention that is not ready for prime time yet. So sorry about this emergency edit. You're going to hear me do this again a little bit later in the episode, and there's more of an in-depth explanation there. But back to the conversation between me and Nick.
But I'm curious to hear what Leah say about the convention, because a lot of big claim, like new things, you know, mm-hmm. teasing some new stuff that yep. with not a whole lot of details yet. So yes. I'm curious that somebody is actively thinking about something new to do. Yeah. And I am interested to hear.
Well, we'll find out more about that in a few minutes. Before you and I sign off, what do you got coming up that the listeners should know about?
I will be at the castle May 6th through 12th
mm-hmm.
with, I'll be in the palace again. Hosting the show.
Nice.
With Chipper Lowell and Rocco, which I am very excited about to see Rocco once again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who else is on that week. So I don't know who's in Close Up or Parlor or anything like that. But after that, I just got some of my own shows, mm-hmm. masterpiece shows at the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I think I'm gonna, this was my thought, Eric, was that at this point, I've done a year of that show,
mm-hmm.
My show, Masterpiece at P3.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of approaching the last 6 to 8 shows here as a film shoot. And edited it up as like a video that I can just like, people message me all the time saying they wish they could see it. So I think I'm gonna try to put it together. I hope it edits together well. You know, I change things so much show to show. Yeah. So,
that's cool.
Yeah, so I'm kind of approaching the not the last ones. I'll do it again, but I'll probably take a break after this one in June 1st. So like that might be the last one for a while. Probably going into like the winter time or something like that, so I can edit some things up and
That'd
make
be
some
cool.
changes and all that. But yeah, so I think I'm gonna try to edit it up and have a nice little polished video for people to check out.
That'd be cool. Maybe
Yeah.
maybe take some hints from Taylor Hughes and throw it up on Amazon.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know
Yeah.
what's, I don't know what the what's possible out there, but that's certainly a possibility.
Well, the next big thing I've got is not until, so I'm going to be doing the IBM in Tacoma in July, but before that, in June, I'll be in San Diego back at Mystique.
Ooh, I gotta
So,
get back out there.
yeah, so
Yeah,
I'm doing
that's a great venue.
couple days in San Diego, then a couple days in La Jolla. So
Yeah.
keep your
If
eyes
you
peeled
guys,
for
if
that.
anybody lives out there and hasn't been to either one of those places,
They're
you gotta
great.
go. And I know it might be like a little, like maybe sometimes it's expensive, but you won't be disappointed if you check it out. So yeah, it's a really cool place.
And then I just got my restaurant gig, Town Hall, here in Columbus. If you're ever in Columbus on a Saturday or Sunday from noon to two, come by Town Hall, because I'm always like, if you want to find out what we're going to release from Penguin, Town Hall is a great place to go see the stuff
Yeah, you
that
want
I'm
the
working
sneak peek on the new tricks.
on.
It's they're at Town Hall in Columbus, Ohio, the
But
week before they come out.
that venue is like becoming really fun for me. I was doing X Light, like table to table.
That's insane.
Which is like arguably one of my new favorite tricks.
Yeah,
I love it.
that's totally crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So.
no, that's about it. May,
Yeah.
June. That's what I got. Nothing after that. Trying to keep it light.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, thanks so much for being on the show, and I'll talk to you again next week. And right now, I'm going to kick it over to myself and Leah Orleans.
Thanks so much to Nick for joining me on the show. Now, on to the main event. Regular listeners to this show will know the circus and variety artist Leah Orleans, who has been a traveling performer for years, performing in some of the most coveted pitches and festivals across the country. She's been a staple in the magic world for over a decade, and now she's putting her own spin on the convention circuit. Leah joined me via Zoom to discuss her new convention coming next year, and now you get to join our conversation. Leah Orleans, welcome back to the Penguin Magic Podcast. I'm so excited to have you back. A, because our first conversation was great. B, because your mother is one of my favorite people in the world. And C, you're putting on a convention.
Thanks, Eric. I'm so happy to be here. I am. Yes, it's happening for real. It's not just an idea in my head anymore. It's not just a dream that hundreds and hundreds of women have been having. It's real. It's happening.
What is going on? I think that we should start with what it is, what the goal is, and sort of where you are in the planning process.
March 10th through 12th, 2025. At the Santa Fe Station Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, I will be hosting Mystify Magic Festival, a 3-day groundbreaking event that spotlights women in magic and diversity in our industry in a way that really highlights how many incredible entertainers are out there that aren't just men, and not in a way that is bashing towards men in our industry or the incredible growth and work that they do. But so many conventions don't highlight the diversity in the industry, but also they create a space that isn't as welcoming as might be needed to a marginalized group. So our goal is to create a space that's really safe and comfortable for people that have never been to a convention before, or maybe have shied away from conventions because they don't feel like there's enough people there for them to have a community of like-minded or similar individuals.
I think it's really important the way you are putting that, because I know that there are some listeners who might hear, oh, we're trying to spotlight women or something like that, and that is seen as that being male is pejorative, and that's absolutely not the
Right.
case.
Correct.
As someone who is a cisgendered white male, I can sort of stand still, and as Drew Hastings said, the escalator of life will just sort of lift me up. I'm usually not in spaces that make me uncomfortable. But as a queer person, I very often find myself not finding the community that I'm looking for in some conventions. And it's not the fault of the convention. It's just not a queer-focused space. And it sounds like that's just what you're doing here, is saying men are welcome, we can come, but we're focused on women and a more diverse group.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're 100%, you hit the nail right on the head. And it's funny because I am also a queer person. I am also not a magician.
Yeah.
Right. I'm a circus performer who was raised in the magic industry. My parents are magicians. I grew up going to conventions yearly, if not bi-yearly. And I grew up at the Lance Burton Teen Weekend. I grew up with Max Maven and Eugene Berger as mentors and friends and close adults in my life. And I decided to go into circus for many reasons, but one of them was definitely because I never really felt super cozy and comfy in the magic world. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting hit on very inappropriately at conventions when I was 16 years old. Mm-hmm. I remember getting harassed or comments made about my body and my gender as a teenager at conventions by magicians who are well enough known in the industry for that to really not be okay. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's not okay for anybody to do it, but the comfort level of that, those situations. And I know I am not, that is not a unique story.
Yeah.
And I went into the circus world where queerness and gender and body positivity and all that is very normal in that world.
Yeah.
And at circus conventions and juggling conventions, you don't feel that as much. To the extent at all. You don't feel the power play. You don't feel like you kind of have to be on defense. So my goal is to take the experience of those conventions and bring it into the magic industry through a reinvented system. And it's happening. And this was kind of a wish and kind of a fun pie in the sky dream for a bit. And then the more I talked about it, the more people were like, yeah, that's needed. Do it. And people high up in the industry, people with influence, people with power, were like, yes, do it. How can I help? What can I do? And the speed at which I was able to assemble a rock star team of people, big names that supported this and gave me very good advice and helped me through a lot of the initial stages. It was incredible. And then here we are now, 6 months later, and it is full on happening.
That is so exciting. Running your first convention has to be daunting. But collecting a team together is a very, it's a very wise move of getting advice and not just charging in whole hog by yourself and being like, let's see what happens. Like, that's not the way to do it.
Yeah. I've been doing event management and event planning for 5 or 6 years now. Nothing of this scale in terms of money and the amount of people, but honestly, it's almost similar. I don't know if you've ever heard of the term 10xing, of like taking something that you're doing and doing it 10 times bigger. And there's a whole theory about how 10x is easier than 2x.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm taking these systems of retreats and events that I've run and just going 10 times larger. And they're right. It is easier to scale it in that way. I have people like Sean Farquhar and Simone Marin and a whole long list, Ben Barnes, people who have been extremely helpful to the organizational aspect of this. And that gives me a lot of confidence. Through this process, I've never once felt like this is something that's too big or too scary to do. Which is very cool.
I mean, you've nailed down a venue, which is oftentimes that is one of the biggest hurdles. And so now you're probably in the talent phase of getting things booked and figuring out who's going to run workshops and lectures and shows. Can you share any sneak previews as to who we are going to see?
Ooh, I see. What do you know when this is coming out? When is this podcast?
This will be at least a week from this coming Thursday. So
okay, so within the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, so we're recording on the 16th, and the episode will likely drop on the 25th.
Oh, that's good. That's good timing. Cool. We're planning on opening registration the 8th of May, and we will be slow dripping out more announcements as we book them. We are in the programming stages. Mm-hmm. We have not signed anything yet with anybody. Mm-hmm. It's all conversations right now that we're having. So no one is officially contracted besides myself to be there. I will not be performing or presenting, but I will be there for sure.
Yeah.
And my team. But regarding panels and lectures and performances, we have a few people that are very interested and committed to this. Mm-hmm. And we're very excited about them. We get to fly over a very well-known magician from across the pond, mm-hmm. who has completely pioneered close-up magic for a very long time through a feminine lens. And she is extremely excited to be presenting and performing and headlining our close-up show as well.
I'll confirm with you off pod. I understand that as we're recording right now and you don't have things signed and confirmed, that you have to be a little cagey,
which
as a podcaster, I'm it's my duty to suss these things out. But I'm if that's the case, I'm very excited because I mean I'm sure with
you. Are we talking?
Hey, sorry to interrupt here. So normally I don't edit stuff. I give you everything. However, I kind of did my job as a podcaster a little bit too well. And Leah told me some of the amazing lineup that they have planned. However, that is not ready for announcement. And so my bad, I accidentally dragged it out of her. We got really excited and started talking about it. But that resulted in me having to come back in and edit this like this. So don't worry about it. The fun part is, though, Leah has agreed to come back on the show when everything is ready for announcement. And she has committed to tell us about the exciting lineup when it's ready to announce. So my bad. Sorry, I interviewed too well. Let me tell you, I'm super excited about this. Okay, back to the interview between me and Leah Orley.
Our programming is going to be very different than a lot of what is used to being seen at magic lectures. There will be less like, here's my amazing trick and how it works. Mm-hmm. And there will be more, here is theory that no matter where you are in your magic career or your journey, you can apply to make you better mm-hmm. immediately. We're talking about workshops about acting with your face mm-hmm. and being better at, you know, acting surprised when a trick happens and not doing this like silly mugging oh face, but actually being able to pull real emotion out of you. Mm-hmm. We're talking about how to handle money and your finances. We're talking about what to have in your gig bag for mm-hmm. backups, sharing tips and tricks to dealing with hecklers and inappropriate comments. Mm-hmm. We're going to be talking about how to write a good introduction for yourself, how to write better copy for your website, how to up the level of your social media promotion and your marketing. We're going to be talking about intergenerational industry magic. We're hoping to have a generational panel with magicians from all ages talking about the changes that they've seen, what they want to do better, what they want to see better, what it used to be like, and how far we've come or how far we have to go. I'm really excited about that one.
That's really exciting. You know, my favorite, so I attend a lot of like, you know, cons, not like magic mm-hmm. conventions, but like, you know, anime conventions or gaming conventions, just like, and it's a whole different world with really fascinating panels generated by a lot of the attendees. And I've always thought that magic conventions could benefit from that. Not that I don't love performances at night and lectures during the day, and then spending time in the dealer's room and sessioning after the shows. But being like those panel discussions, and especially user-generated panels, are so exciting. So I'm glad to hear that you're bringing the panel discussion format to the Magic convention.
100%. We're definitely going to have panels. We're also going to be doing like short fireside chats. We're going to be trying to promote a lot of small group conversations. So 5 to 10 people sitting around talking for 15 minutes about insert subject here, and then a timer goes off and we switch and we do something different. So you're making these smaller, more intimate connections with people. There's going to be a lot of opportunities that facilitate networking in a way that's not just here's my business card, but sharing real knowledge, being vulnerable with each other, being emotionally open. And that's also highlighting this concept that we have of, we're expecting about 30% of our attendees to not be regulars to Magic conventions.
Yeah.
These are people who maybe have gone to one convention or two conventions, or people who haven't really felt comfortable going or felt like they wouldn't be welcome at your typical convention. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, this is an opportunity for our vendors and our presenters to reach a new demographic.
Yeah.
For them to say, oh, wow, these are people who haven't just already seen all of our stuff that comes out regularly. These are new people. We can make a new impact on them at a time when they're emotionally vulnerable and ready to be creative.
Yeah.
And that's such a big problem when women or femme presenting people are at conventions and they feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. They're not ready to be creative. They don't feel open to saying yes to buying something new that's going to further their career. There's a level of guardedness that we hold when we're not comfortable. So my goal is to create a space where everyone's real open mentally and emotionally and creatively, and to like step back and see what comes from it, you know? Mm-hmm.
That is very exciting, and I can't wait to find out more, and I really hope that I get to go to this, because I always love like new ideas in the convention space, and like, I mean, I love going to conventions, because, you know, who doesn't love seeing their friends all the time? But at the same time, like when something new and exciting happens, like it just thrills me to death, and I love experiencing that newness.
I agree. And I'm having a really good time listening to the needs and the problems and the want of our attendees or our demographic of attendees, and saying, okay, how can we create space for these to be solved? How can we create space from a very new standpoint, and not just being like, okay, what's the coolest, hottest new trick? Let's put that into the spotlight. But saying, what's the biggest issue and how can we center that?
Well, Leah, where can people find out more information about this convention if they want to keep up to date? Because I think what we're going to do is we're going to make this one like a little short. But then as you release more information, I'm going to have you back on and we can really dive into like all of the panels and the people that you're going to have on.
I love that. That sounds great. If people want to get involved, or they want to be the first to be able to sign up, because we're expecting registration to sell out pretty quickly based on the interest of this. It's been pretty shocking. MystifyMagicFestival.com is our website. We're also on Instagram at Mystify Magic Festival and Facebook Mystify Magic Festival. There's an email list that you can sign up for. There are links to that on all of the above pages. And the email list, you will be the first to know. That is the first place that we'll be launching registration, first place we'll be announcing to that exclusive email list. And we'll open registration on the 8th.
Excellent.
On May 8th. Yes. We will be opening registration on May 8th, and that will continue as long as we still have tickets left. But it is going to be an exclusive convention for our first year. Mm-hmm. We are limiting ticket sales, so...
Well,
people
shouldn't sleep on this, because it sounds like it's going to be amazing. And I hope that you're able to book the incredible Jan Rose for this event. We'll
Oh, she's in.
Is she in?
She's absolutely in. She's in.
Excellent.
She's in. The incredible Jan Rose will be in, and I'm very excited to have her there. And our sponsors are amazing too. We're reaching out right now, and we're talking with a lot of different magic venues and companies that want to be part of this. And that excitement has been so thrilling. Mm-hmm. And we're still looking. We're still looking for people. So if you want to be backing and be behind this project, please contact us, because it is going to take a whole village to put this on for the first time. You know, we're not an organization that has a $60,000 slush fund. Like, this is me and my hopes and dreams making this happen. So we're ready. We're ready to get the team on board.
Well, Leah, thanks for teasing it for our podcast guest. And I can't wait to have you back on when we can give the full announcement as to the lineup and everything else. Leah, thanks so much for joining us here on the Penguin Magic Podcast.
Thank you, Eric.
That's going to do it for this week, kids. Thanks so much to Leah for the convention preview, and thanks to you for listening. Remember, we love hearing from you listeners. If you have anything you want myself or Nick to discuss in our opening conversation, be sure to reach out. We love discussing the topics you think are fit to dish. As always, we're a weekly podcast, so be sure to like and subscribe, as well as share your favorite episodes on the social media platform you're watching the NHRL robot fights on. If you wanted to reach out to me about anything this week, you'll have to create a new Alexa skill to let me know, because I am smartifying my house and programming it to do some really weird stuff. But if letting the robots take your house over isn't your cup of tea, you can always hit me up on Instagram at Eric Tate. That's at E-R-I-K-T-A-I-T from me and everyone else here at the P3 Magic Studios. Practice, practice, perform.